You will now enter the conference.
Hello, Jeff?
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, can I speak to Sam? Is this Sam?
Yeah, it is Sam. Jeff?
Yes, how are you?
Hey, what's going on, man?
Hey, man, thanks for taking the time to listen to this. I appreciate it.
Oh, man, thank you for calling into the podcast and just being a part of this. I wanted to talk about you guys mainly because I don't know how much street cred this has. I've been a fan of you guys since you guys been around, like the late 90s, early aughts. Yeah, I know. Me and my friends, we got together and we tried to sing The Hardest Thing and all the hits. So thank you for calling into the podcast.
Well, hey, man, I don't want to jeopardize your street cred, but I can tell you very much that I appreciate that, man. That's really nice of you to say. And heck, man, it's always an honor and always flattering to hear people tell us that they, you know, that they were singing our songs. Look, man, I was that guy once. You know, I started off singing Boys to Men songs with my friends, and that's how, you know, this turned into you know, 98 Degrees, so... It's much appreciated, man. Thanks for being so kind to say that.
No, let's just jump right into it, man. You guys are going to be here very shortly in Detroit. You guys got, no pun intended, but kind of pun intended, the band is back together. You guys are doing it. You guys, how is the tour going so far?
The tour has been amazing, man. Thanks for asking. We're excited to get back to Detroit. I mean, we truly a Motown act. I mean, we got our first label was Motown Records, and you know, we got signed to Motown, you know, emulating a lot of the music from the Motown era. So it's always a joy, and we're Midwest guys, so we're always excited to get back to the Midwest and in Detroit. Last year we loved being in Motor City. It was a blast. The tour this year is better than last. We've got more of a turnout, obviously, because people understand what the show is. And they know that we're back in full effect, and yes, the band is back together. It's great.
Now, this show is going to be different from last year, mainly because it's more based on the Christmas theme. You guys had the 2-CD set came out, the Let It Snow album. So is it going to be more of a Christmas theme, or are you going to sprinkle in a few hits? How you guys are going to do that?
Well, we'd be mistaken if we got up on stage and just did a bunch of Christmas songs. It is the holiday season. We're aware of that. It is, you know, labeled as a Christmas show. But no, man, we got to have the hits in there. We have all the hits. We have songs from this Christmas album that sold almost 3 million copies in the late 90s, to the songs from the Let It Snow album, which we had a top hit season of love with last year. We have some other Christmas songs. We have a little comedy in there. It's up close and personal. We engage the fans. We've got all kinds of stuff going on in the show. So we're excited to get up there and show you guys what we got. It is a little bit different than those that came last year. The tone is the same, but the show is different. We've got some different songs in there, sprinkled in some different things. But, of course, we have the hits in there for sure.
Okay. One thing I wanted to know, and you guys have been around for over 20 years, how has your fans grown with you? Because I'm pretty sure you notice a lot has changed in the last 20 years. You yourself, you've evolved, you've grown. We're going to touch on that in a minute. But how have the fans, because I would imagine your fans probably have kids now, and they want to introduce you to them, or how has that changed?
Well, we had some very young fans. Thanks for the question. Yeah, when we started out, we didn't expect to have such young fans, but we did so many things with Disney and Nickelodeon that we had sometimes female fans that were pre-teens, you know, really young fans. So 20 years later, obviously those fans are in their late 20s, into their 30s, and even into their 40s now. So they have grown with us. They've grown up with us. I mean, and then they'd come, you know, we left for a little while, and they were there when we came back. And they have introduced us. Some of them do have kids, and some of them do bring their kids to the shows. And then, you know, of course, we came back and we did our inaugural comeback tour with New Kids on the Block and Boys and Men, who have different fan bases than ours. So we were able to gain some fans from their fan bases. We, of course, were supposed to do a show with Backstreet Boys that unfortunately it did sell out, but it got canceled because of weather. So we have some of their fans, and it's just great to be back and, you know, living this lifestyle just as if we never left in the in the late 90s, early 2000s, and have people coming out and supporting us. They're more excitable and more enthusiastic and more loyal than ever.
Now, I got to ask, is it easy, like you talk about Backstreet Boys and you talk about the other bands, and it's... is it the same feeling to you guys personally, or does it change with age?
Well, I think it does change a little bit with age. When you're younger, you know, obviously you're a young guy and you get signed and all that good stuff, and then immediately for us, we had it sort of seemed like overnight success. So we struggled for a couple of years, and then all of a sudden we were, you know, one of the biggest groups in the world. And that's a lot for a young person, and there's a lot of pressure that goes along with that. When you're starting a group to sing for girls and try to make money and be famous, you don't keep in mind that there's a business aspect to it that a lot of people have their hands in. And you got to learn about the business really quickly, and sometimes you have to get burned before you learn. And then that's what happened with us. So although we had a great ride, you know, we certainly had a lot of stumbling blocks and ups and downs and a lot of pressure as young people that we don't experience now that we're older. Now we've been in the business in our own fraction, our own right, and you know, we have different careers and we have families, and, you know, 98 degrees to us is not to be all end all of our lives anymore like it was 20 years ago. And so that affords us the opportunity to enjoy it, to get out there and just actually, you know, what it's meant to be, fun. You go out and sing songs to people that like them and enjoy performing, and, you know, and then you enjoy the moment. And I think that it's a stark difference between now and back then. Back then, it was a much more stressful time. You know, we certainly have gotten better as performers individually and collectively because we had 20 years to practice. And so, to me, it's almost like the group hitting its stride now, 20 years later, so it's quite a bit different.
Now, you mind if I ask some questions about you personally? Like, don't get me wrong, love the group, but I've been following your career personally because since 98 Degrees, you've branched out and you've done other things. I will hope so. You just kind of alluded to it a little bit, because for starters, I know it isn't the end all be all, but you were one of the founding members of 98 Degrees, and a lot of people don't know there was a 98 Degrees before the 98 Degrees we all saw. You want to touch on that a little bit?
Well, right. Well, like your group of guys that you said were singing the hardest thing, I had a group of guys that were doing the Boys and Men song, and I started the group with some guys that I went to college and high school with. And, you know, we were from a very small town in Ohio, and I think, you know, I had a certain vision for the group, and we, you know, migrated to L.A. to pursue the dream, because you didn't have viral media and social media and stuff like that. You had to go to L.A. or New York to pursue your dream back then, because that's where the industry was. And we were out there for a while, and those guys sort of got cold feet and went home. Those guys were talented guys, but certainly they weren't to the caliber of 98 Degrees and the guys I'm with now. So it was sort of a blessing in disguise. At the time when they quit the group, it hurt, and it was, I didn't know what would happen, but certainly, you know, I would have never gotten a chance to enjoy this journey with Drew and Nick and Justin like I have for the last 20 years. So, you know, it was great. I mean, you might say I founded the group, but no, I mean, I started another group, and then I was lucky enough, in my mind, to meet these other guys and put a group together with them. So I think the four of us are all founding them.
Now, do you keep in touch with the originals?
Yes, those guys are my best friends. I mean, I produce music with them. I've always tried to include them in the industry because I think they're such talented guys. They do keep in touch with me still. In fact, we did a show in Cleveland that a couple of the guys came to see a couple of days ago. I've always maintained friendships with them, close friendships with them throughout the years. So I still have them in my life 20 years later.
That's cool. And well, you've also created music by solo with songs like That Girl. You've also appeared in the movie Dead 7, which was pretty cool because it was kind of a spoof of the boy band? Is that all right? I want to ask that question too. Is that a bad word to use? I know you guys aren't boys anymore; you're grown men, but you know that whole boy band stigma. Is that a bad word to use, or do you grow out of it? Do you shake it? I've never been in a boy band or a pop group, so can you tell me a little bit about it?
That's another great question. I mean, you asked another great question. Certainly, when we started our group, we took ourselves seriously. The four of us are all vocalists, so, you know, we were playing singing a cappella in Motown's office. So, you know, we never heard the word boy band. The Backstreet Boys were not relevant at the time, and NSYNC was not on the scene. The only boy band you might kind of consider at that time was maybe New Edition, which we're considered a boy band, or New Kids on the Block, which I thought we were completely different then. So when we first started, we really didn't hear it until we started traveling overseas, and so, you know, we got to Europe, and everybody was calling us a boy band, and we were like, what's a boy band? And then Backstreet Boys emerged, and New Kids, NSYNC emerged in the U.S., And boy band originally was attributed to a group that was put together by some sort of Svengali or some sort of person that knew was an expert, and, you know, they picked guys that looked a certain way and boosted upon this, and they didn't really sing, and they looked good, and they just danced. And that was the connotation that was attributed to being in a boy band. So at first, we were trying to shrink that connection or that comparison. But obviously, when you compare to people like NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys, which sell millions of records all over the world and some of the biggest groups of all time, and we're mentioned in the same breath as those guys, we learned to embrace it really quick.
Yeah.
And certainly now, you definitely would want to be called a boy band, because we're getting to be old men. So I mean, I think that at times in the business, and especially music, people take themselves a little bit too seriously. Anybody that really did research on us or listened to the music knows that we're vocalists who came to see us live, know that we can all sing live. And so I think that, you know, when you're a young guy, you kind of take those things a little bit more seriously and a little bit more to the heart than good. But ultimately, hey, we've definitely adopted the term, are proud to be associated with the term, and certainly embrace the term, because, look, that's what people want to stamp for us, and if that stamps is also compared to success in a very, very one-in-a-million and one-in-a-multi-million chance business, then I'm happy to embrace it.
Now, we were talking about this a little bit before the call, and the thing with you that made it so cool is that you kind of gravitated, you know, you surpassed that, because you entered my world a little bit, because you're friendly with Jesse Goddard from Impact Wrestling. Now, I'm a big pro wrestling guy, but you guys did a song together as the Girls With Me. Did you a back and forth type of thing, reminiscent to, like, you know, McCartney and Michael Jackson, The Girl Is Mine, reminiscent to Brandy Monica, that type of thing. How did you hook up with Jesse Goddard?
I love that you know that, man. So Jesse, I think we connected on LinkedIn, and which is a business type social media platform, for those that don't know about that, which is a really great resource for business. And, you know, I researched Jesse, and I knew he was really prolific in a number of areas. He's on Big Brother, and he's an Impact wrestler, and he does a number of other things. He's on an Amazon series as well. New Dogs, Old Tricks, or something like that, which is great. And he's just a hustler. And he was like, well, how can we work together? And I had created this male review called Men of the Strip that was traveling around and having a lot of success. It was sort of a singing, a boy band male review thing. It was a sort of a metamorphosis from the old school type of male reviews, more of a polished type show. And I asked him to host that. He was, of course, without knowing what the show is all about, was reluctant to do that and protective of his own brand. But so he declined hosting that. But then, you know, I asked him, hey, man, why don't we do a song? And again, he was reluctant about that, because a lot of people that don't sing, think there's a big rocket science to it, and you know, they have their insecurities about it. So he said he didn't want to do it, but ultimately he came back and reconsidered, said he wanted to do it. I got him in the studio. I thought, look, the only way to make this work and get people to really understand it or make it kind of funny, again, tongue-in-cheek and spoof like the Dead 7 or something like that, not taking yourself too seriously, but having fun with yourselves and your brands, I thought we should do something like a modern-day back-and-forth us fighting over a girl, because it's ridiculous that Jesse and I would ever fight over a girl, because obviously I would have no chance. You know,
I don't know, man. You hit that gym pretty hard. I saw you. You hit that gym pretty hard. You can probably get him.
I hit it pretty hard, but he's a professional wrestler. So, I mean, that he knows how to even orchestrate fights. You know, he knows how to fake fight for a living. So, anyway, I thought it would be a funny gimmick. We decided to write the song. We went back and forth on the lyrics, and we wanted to trick it out like a 90s, late 90s kind of song for our fans so they can relate, you know, nostalgically from a music standpoint. And it just turned out to be like a viral sort of frenzy. I think we had over 100,000 views on it, which I never expected. Of course, Jesse had aspirations that it would do that well, and now folks are asking, you know, him to record more music, and we're talking about maybe doing a more serious project, but it turned out to be, you know, that's what we wanted it to do, get people sparked up, make some noise, get excited about it, and let people know that he could actually sing. And he was great. He was great in the studio, and at first when he was a little trepidatious, he had some experience in choir and stuff like that, so he had some sort of confidence about going and doing it. But once we got in the studio, it was like an old hat for him. He picked it up really, really quick and turned out to do a great job with it, man.
Now, one thing about this, I gotta ask, this, you probably shoot this down real quick. He jumped in your side, your pond. You ever thought about jumping in his, going into Impact Wrestling?
I talked about it with him. He was like, man, you'd get killed in there. I was like, all right, let's do it. I'm down. I'm not shy. I'm not scared. I'll challenge Jesse anytime, anywhere. I saw him in the studio. He's a big pussy cat.
Okay. One thing I was reading, and I did some homework because I wanted to talk to you about this. Before all of this got started, apparently, and if I'm wrong, just please tell me I'm wrong, you work security for Phil Collins?
Yeah, man. It's funny you know that. I don't know where you read that at, but...
I do some homework. I do a little homework every now and then.
Yeah, you do a great job, man. That's a testament to your quality of journalism, which is great, man. That's excellent. But I started off, you know, when I moved to LA with the original group of guys I was with before 98 Degrees, and those guys had quit. I needed to get an odd job, and I had been working closely with James Brown, and his security head of security gave me a job working clubs. So I originally worked a bunch of clubs in L.A. and was all over the place there and doing the Roxy and the Whiskey. And then one of my gigs was working for Phil Collins' estate. I didn't work for him specifically, but his estate was being built in L.A. in Beverly Hills. And so I would sit there and man his empty, being-built house. So not quite as sexy as working for Phil Collins as his personal security, but... I did work inadvertently for Phil Collins.
Okay. Now, I got to ask this. I only got a few. Now, I've already eaten up a lot of your time, but I got to ask this question. What was the aha moment? Everyone I talk to, they have a moment where, I don't want to say you made it, because that's just kind of general, but the aha moment, like, oh my God, I am... a successful fill in the blank. You know what I mean? That aha moment where, what was yours?
We've had a lot of them, man. So it's really hard to put my finger and like point at one of them as being, you know, that moment, because you have a bunch of them. Because you'll achieve one pinnacle of success and then you'll go, you know, you start to strive for a next one. And then you'll have that and then you'll go, okay, what's next? And then, you know, so I don't know that there was one specifically, but I think probably the one where you really realize, like, okay, you're in good company now, and you're sort of in the mix with people, was when we performed for Michael Jackson at his special, at his tribute special for VH1.
That's pretty big.
with Luther Vandross. We worked to perform with Luther and Usher. So, you know, that was a kind of surreal moment. But there were so many. I mean, we did a song with Mariah. We did one with Wonder for Disney. Hearing the record hearing Invisible Man on the radio for the first time, that was an aha moment. So it's really tough to put your finger on one of them. But, you know, just reflecting on all of those, you realize how lucky you are to have had one of those moments. So I don't take any of it for granted.
Okay. Last two questions, and these probably some big questions because I know some people who's listening to this trying to get into the business or anything like that. So what is the most important lesson that you learned in your career thus far?
Well, I think, that working hard, I mean, there are three things that I think are important to keep in mind when you're doing something like this or anything. It's work as hard as you possibly can, because there's always somebody working harder, believe it or not. I think that you must stay humble in the process no matter what, which we've tried to do. It's hard to do when a lot of things are thrown at you. And then I think have faith in yourself. I mean, you can have even close family members, closest friends sort of kind of give you some negativity or throw shade or hate on you a little bit and make you second guess yourself. But you have to have faith in yourself, and obviously God, the universe, some things out there helping you along the way. But I think those three things are key in this business. Work hard, stay humble, have faith.
And this is kind of piggybacking off that last question. It's like you're looking at my notes. But any advice you want to give to the new crop of people? Because, you know, with technology has advanced, they can do more things. They don't have to move. You mentioned YouTube earlier. You're currently talking on a podcast. But even with all the, you know, technology advances, is there any advice that you could give to the new crop, the new generation coming up?
Well, don't quit. I mean, obviously it seems as if the competition is harder, but if you continue to work very, very hard and have self-belief, unwavering self-belief and determination, you'll find a way to make it. And it's the guys that quit, the guys that give up, the guys that make excuses, the folks that say that, you know, this got in the way or that got in the way, or find ways to say, give reasons for why they didn't make it or don't make it. But those that persevere and stick with it, have self-belief in their stuff, they sort of cut through the sea of talent that's out there. I don't think it's any different than it was before. Obviously, technology gives you a chance to give yourself exposure, which are wonderful tools. But ultimately, your work ethic and your self-perseverance and belief will give you the opportunity to have success.
Man, Jeff, that's great advice, and I can't wait to see you when you come back to the Motor City. Thank you so much for giving me a little piece of your time, man. I know I went over, but, man, this has just been awesome.
Well, you were fantastic, man. I appreciate your time as well. I know it's valuable for you, too, and congrats on the podcast. I look forward to seeing you soon, man. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Talk to you soon, man. Thanks, Sam.
All right. Bye.